Well, over the last couple of nights, I have really been enjoying a book which I think could be of tremendous help to many, many people. The book is called You're Wearing That? Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. Perhaps you know Deborah Tannen's previous best-selling book, You Just Don't Understand, which also explores this whole topic of how people talk with one another and the almost limitless ways in which we manage to misunderstand what each other means. And there are some very special and to some extent unique ways in which that occurs between mothers and daughters, even mothers and daughters who very much love one another but don't always know how to talk with one another. The book is published by Random House, and we are going to be talking with Deborah Tannen about this book and how she has come to understand all that she does about this very interesting topic. Deborah Tannen, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
Looking forward to talking with you very much. I think one of the things that I really feel like asking you right off the bat is just how unique the dynamics are between mother and daughter, in the sense that I think once upon a time we thought about men and women in very compartmentalized sort of fashion, or at least that's the assumption we make. And of course, a lot of those lines have blurred a bit over time. And it isn't the father who's the breadwinner. It isn't the mother who cooks all the meals and so on. I mean, the lines have blurred in all kinds of ways. Have they not blurred in this respect, or does the way we communicate, does it still have rather unique colors and shapes depending on whether or not it's mothers and daughters or fathers and sons and so on?
You know, that's such a good question. When I wrote You Just Don't Understand, there was kind of a feeling, well, now we have so much equality, these things shouldn't be coming up. And, of course, a lot has changed. In many ways, women and men are the same. And yet these patterns still existed by which we frequently misunderstand each other. And I'd say the same is true for mothers and daughters. In a way, mothers, and this is about adult daughters, mothers and daughters are like friends. I don't think that was the case in the past. But that doesn't mean that they don't often approach conversations from different perspectives. And in fact, all the aspects of women's conversation that come up in women's friendships are there with mothers and daughters, but more intense, perhaps, because of the intensity of the relationship, how much time they spend together, how important they are in each other's lives. So absolutely, much of what I say in the book is true also of fathers and sons, fathers and daughters, mothers and sons. And yet, I kept encountering a level of complexity and intensity with mothers and daughters that really wasn't there with the others. Very interesting when you talk to women who have both daughters and sons, and they'll say, it's just totally different with my daughter. Talking to her, it's the best and the worst. Sometimes it's like walking on eggshells. Women tell me they talk more to their daughters. They expect to talk more to their daughters. That's not surprising. I found when I studied women and men, girls and women, as distinguished from boys and men, negotiate the relationship through talk. Your best friend is the one you tell everything to. Whereas for boys and men, often the best friend is the one you do everything with, or the person you can turn to if you need him, though you may not talk to him for quite a while. And so all this talk, and often talk about personal topics, makes mothers and daughters particularly close, but it also means there's more opportunity to say the wrong thing. And the negotiation of how close or distant we are is another thing that I found of girls and women. A big preoccupation of, are we the same, are we different? Cherishing the way you're the same, but really don't wanting to be too the same because you want to still be independent and recognize ways you're different. It's a constant negotiation with mothers and daughters as well. We kind of look to each other as representatives of ourselves, look for ourselves in each other.
Before
and
we dig...
Maybe just one little last point here. And another thing that seems to come up more with daughters than with sons, the feeling the daughters have that their mothers are criticizing their appearance. So, you know, I call it the big three, clothing, hair, and weight, where the mothers are commenting, like, do you like your hair that long? Oh, your hair looks so beautiful when it's smoothed back, but saying it when it's not smoothed back, but falling forward. And that's a difference because women, more than men in our culture, are judged by appearance, and even more, the range from which we have to choose our styles of hair and dress are much broader. So the chances of choosing exactly the perfect style of hair and dress that could not be improved are actually pretty slim. And women often look at other women thinking she'd look better if her hair or her clothes were different, but we don't say it. But mothers feel that they're entitled or maybe even obligated to say it. That's their job, to help their daughters improve.
I love one story you tell about a woman who was telling her mother about some presentation she was going to be giving at work, and it was a really big deal and a very exciting thing, and the mother's first question was, what did you wear?
And, isn't that wonderful? Sorry. It's so wonderful because if a friend had asked her that, she probably would have been pleased. The woman who told me that said, who cares what I wore? Well, she cared. She put a lot of effort into deciding what to wear. But when we hear it from our mothers, there's a feeling that she's focusing on our clothing or our hair instead of our accomplishment, because we so much want her to be approving and appreciating and valuing in ourselves, in valuing what we value in ourselves. I have heard so many funny stories. A daughter's on television. She's present at the at a bill signing ceremony with the President of the United States, and her mother watches it, and when she talks to her, says, you needed a haircut. Or the daughter's picture's in the paper, and the mother says, I see you didn't have time to cut your bangs. I have heard endless stories like this.
One of the things you mentioned in actually the preface of the book is that you have analyzed word-for-word transcriptions of conversations that were tape-recorded by students in some of your classes. Just tell us briefly a little bit about that.
Yes, I teach linguistics at Georgetown University, and my field is sociolinguistics, which is how we use language and social relationships. And our method is to record conversations, transcribe them, and study the transcript with, of course, the sound of it in our heads, because the sound of it is such an important part of the meaning. So as part of my classes, my students frequently record conversations and analyze them in papers and bring them into class, and kind of like workshop. So it's an opportunity to really hear moment to moment what gets said, and you can pin down when the trouble started. Because so often when, again, it can happen with anybody, but it often happens with mothers and daughters, you think you're having an amiable conversation, and then suddenly there's a tone of contention, and each thinks the other introduced that tone of contention.
Hmm.
So one person thinks I made a simple, honest, innocent comment, and why did she suddenly get angry, and the other one is thinking, why did she say this threatening thing? So she is the one who started it. So if you can actually look at the transcript and pinpoint that, it's really thrilling to see it.
We're speaking with Deborah Tannen about her book, You're Wearing That? Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. Much of the book sets up kind of a scenario of, in the form of a dichotomy, that so often there is some kind of delicate balancing act going on between two things, and often maybe contradictory things or two sides of the same coin. And it's so interesting to think about this. I mean, for instance, that in a close mother-daughter relationship, what is the difference between involvement and invasion? And often in conversations, just the kind of problematic conversation you were just telling us about, in the turn of a phrase, a mother's involvement in their daughter's life starts to feel like something else.
Yes, there are so many of these examples where caring and criticizing are created by the same words, or a show of involvement can risk seeming overbearing. Just a couple, or critical, a couple of quick examples. A mother calls up her daughter and begins the conversation, "I miss you." Well, you say that to a friend, the friend would probably say, "Oh, I miss you too." It would be a positive thing. But in this case, the daughter said, "Why did you miss me? We just talked to each other a week ago." Well, her back was up because she heard the implication she should have called. And, of course, the meaning doesn't come only from the current conversation. It comes from all the ones you've had in the past. Very amusing to me when I heard the same conversation recounted to me by a mother and a daughter individually. Didn't talk to them together, but I talked to them separately. So, for example, one daughter commented to me, I heard from the mother first, and the mother said, "This is a typical example of I can't open my mouth, I make an innocent comment, and I don't know what I said to set her off." She said, there was a vegetarian at dinner, so we were all talking about vegetables, and I simply asked her, "What vegetables do you like?" And suddenly there's a flare-up. And she said, "Well, maybe I said, do you like vegetables?" Well, I talked to the daughter. The daughter said, "My mother is always telling me I don't give my kids enough vegetables." Okay, so this is the backstory. And she said, "Everybody was saying what vegetables they liked, and my mother said to me, do you even like vegetables?" Now, look how different that is, that little word, even. It's an assumption that you don't like vegetables, which grows out of the assumption you're not parenting well, which is so upsetting to daughters. Every mother worries she's not a good enough mother.
And now, in your book, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
In your book, you talk about meta messages, and I think you're giving us an example of one. But I want to make sure I understand what you mean by that term. But it sounds like the meaning which we assume somebody has in something that they're saying, on the surface it might be one thing, but underneath it is something else. Is that what you mean by a meta message?
Yes. Well, the message is the meaning of the words, and the meta message is the implications, what you understand about the relationship or what the person is trying to say, because they say that in that way at that time. It's not as if a meta message is something sneaky or should have been said directly. Every utterance has a message and a meta message. Now, if I say to you, "How are you?" you've got to know, am I asking for a health report? I might be if I know you've been sick, or is it just a greeting? So that would be the meta message. What am I trying to do by saying this?
Well, it seems to me that because we just talked about how mothers and daughters can be so close, even when there's contentiousness, that sometimes when we feel close to someone, it seems to me we also maybe sometimes maybe overestimate our ability to see beneath the words of other people. I mean, we jump to conclusions that she said this, but what she really meant was this, or what I think she's really getting at is this. Well, maybe not. But when people are close, it seems to me we sometimes jump to those kind of conclusions, which can really complicate this whole matter of communication.
Yeah, well, you're right, because there's so much at stake. We may well misunderstand and misinterpret meta messages all the time, but the repercussions aren't so significant. But daughters want so much to feel that their mothers approve of them. Mothers want so much to feel that they're still helpful, still needed, that the possibility of overinterpretation is really great. And I point out, we often tend to underestimate our own power and overestimate the other's power. So another example, a daughter and her husband have bought a new apartment, and they feel the mother is critical, so they make sure to show her the apartment they've bought when it's beautifully furnished with the former tenant's furnishings. And the mother looks around and she does say some nice things, and then she says, "They may have told you this was in move-in condition, but when they take those pictures off the wall, there are going to be holes." So the daughter and her husband felt the mother was really reaching for something to criticize. And I commented, "Well, maybe she's really reaching for some way she could be helpful. They don't need her anymore. They bought the apartment on their own without her advice. So isn't there some way that her greater experience in the world can be helpful to them? So maybe that's what she was reaching for." I think mothers often don't realize that what they say carries so much weight. They feel it's because they don't matter that their daughters don't want their advice. But often the daughter doesn't want their advice because they matter so much. What her mother says is really hard to ignore. I give an example of my own. Some years ago, my parents were celebrating their 65th anniversary, and my sisters and I made a party for them. And my mother had an idea that whenever you have an important occasion, you must buy a new dress. And I didn't share that, and I didn't really have time to go shopping. I tried. I went to some stores, couldn't find the right dress. Every time I spoke to her, my mother was asking, "Have you gotten a dress?" And she was getting more upset that I wasn't doing what she obviously thought I should do. And I was getting more upset that I felt she was trying to control me and make me do something that I didn't think was necessary. So I did what many women do. I talked to all my friends and got courage, and they all reassured me it was fine to wear a dress I had that was appropriate and in good condition. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to be my own person and resist my mother's pressure and not buy a new dress, and I felt so much better. And then I went to one more store and bought a new dress. The feeling that I was going to disappoint my mother was very strong. And I think mothers, I'm sure that during that whole time, my mother was thinking, why don't I listen to her as if she's not important? I think she would have been amazed if she'd realized how strongly her words were influencing me.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing, isn't it? And you talk about at one point in the book, the great power shift, where at some point in time, a mother really becomes less powerful as their daughters grow up, and the mother needs to deal with this. And yet at the same time, even as a daughter grows into adulthood and establishes her own life and her own abilities, she finds herself often still very much dependent on her mother's reassurance and encouragement. It just underscores how complicated we are. And that there are not, yes, there's not a simple arc here, which you know allows this to sort of unfold in predictable patterns.
Well, that's absolutely true. So many women report, and again, men too, when you go home, quote home, go visit your parents in their home, or your mother, you feel like you're 12 years old again. And it's funny, they always say 12. They don't say 8, and they don't say 15. I think there's something about 12 where you're just on the cusp of becoming an adult, but really not sure that you are an adult. And the feeling that you're dependent on your mother's opinion in itself makes you resentful. But yes, daughters have a lot of power. Often they're the ones who control how often they and their mothers will speak. If there are grandchildren whom the grandmother may adore, it's in the control of the daughter or the daughter-in-law how often she can see them. So all of these things mean a lot of power. So I think if we both, if we recognize our own power, we can perhaps wield it more cautiously. One thing that mothers, I heard from mothers of adult daughters and from daughters when they're being honest about themselves, we treat our mothers more callously than we would anybody else. Maybe we assume they're going to be there when we need them, and if our plans change, we just tell them, sorry, our plans changed. Women often will yell at their mothers much more than they will at their fathers. Women have told me they hang up on their mother, and then they think, oh my goodness, I wouldn't hang up on anybody else. So there is a way that the mother is taken for granted. We expect everything of her. And I think that's often very common of women. We expect more of daughters than sons at the same time as well.
Yeah, you say that there are high expectations when it comes to mother-daughter relationships, and that's one reason why it's kind of a highly charged relationship, and we are so deeply disappointed when things go wrong. And also, of course, so often we don't even really know ourselves what it is we want or need at a given point in time. For instance, you talk about kind of the tricky trade-off between sympathy and advice. I mean, when we're sharing with our mothers, or we're sharing with our daughters for that matter, some sort of problem or something, and what is it that we want? And most of the time we really want sympathy. Sometimes we want advice. How do we know? How does the other person know? It becomes very tricky.
Yeah, that's so true. One of what I think of as the greatest hits from my book, You Just Don't Understand, was the feeling so many women and men recognize that she may be talking about a problem and he wants to be helpful and offers some solution and she gets annoyed. You know, I didn't want the solution. And he thinks, well, what are you telling me if you don't want to do anything about it? Well, it's very fascinating the form this takes with mothers and daughters. They may agree that it's good to just show sympathy, but sometimes the sympathy itself can be too much. Let me give you two examples, one where the daughter appreciated the mother compared to the father and the other where she appreciated the father's style more. And both of these come from students in my classes. So in one case, the daughter had the flu and she called home. And usually when she called home, she talked to her mother. And this, I find across the board, it's much more common for the daughter when she calls home to talk to the mother. But this time, her mother wasn't home, so she talked to her father. Oh, Daddy, I have the flu and I feel so bad. And he said, well, take aspirin. And she said, I did, but it didn't really help. I still feel bad. And he said, we'll go to see the doctor. And she said, I tried, but I couldn't get an appointment because everybody's sick. And he said, well, I can't help you then. And she wrote that she felt let down. She was missing something. And then she realized her mother would have said, oh, you poor thing, I'm so sorry. I wish I was there to make you a cup of tea. I'll call back later, see if you feel better. So she missed that expression of concern. But now here's another one. A young woman broke up with her boyfriend. So she was talking to her friends and her parents. She said normally she spoke more to her friends, but she really wanted her parents' view on this. And she said her father gave her his perspective, and she appreciated it, and then he never brought it up again. Now, that could be seen as a failure of concern, like the father who said, well, I can't help you then. But in this case, the mother's concern actually made it worse. So every time she talked to her mother brought it up. Mm. How are you doing? How's he doing? Have you met anybody else interesting? Has he met anybody else? What are you doing Saturday night? So she finally had to say to her mother, please stop bringing it up. That makes it harder. And her mother was hurt, and she really didn't want to hurt her mother's feelings. And she said that made her realize why she prefers to discuss things with her friends than her mother.
Huh.
And, of course, that's one of the worst things that any woman can feel from her friends or her daughter or mother is being left out.
Right.
Girls really fear that. Girls punish each other by leaving them out. So if I don't tell you what's going on, that means I'm keeping you at arm's length.
Hmm. Something else, too, is that that struck me as a point that really does seem more uniquely applicable to women than to men. You talk about how women really prize indirect communication. They love the idea of being so close to someone that you don't have to spell out every single thing, and that men, when we communicate, don't tend to get into that kind of communicative pattern. But that because there is this sense sometimes of that of indirect kind of communication, and it goes without saying, well, then sometimes important things end up getting unsaid and some misunderstandings really ensue.
Yes, so often our strengths and our weaknesses are two sides of the same coin. And it really came to light when I was talking to one woman who told me first how special her relationship with her daughter was. And she said, she knows me better than anybody. She senses my moods instantly. When I can fool everybody else, I can't fool her. If I'm feeling bad and trying to hide it, she knows instantly. And I heard this, by the way, from so many mothers and daughters, both ways. I know her mood instantly. If she feels bad, I feel bad. If she's happy, I feel happy. But then later in the same conversation, that woman said, it is so frustrating when my mother wants me to do things, but she won't tell me. She wants me to read her mind. For example, she was about to take her mother to the airport. And as they got in the car, her mother said, rather bitterly annoyed, you know, grumpy, had to carry my own suitcase to the car. And the daughter knew, first of all, it was indirect, but she knew that she was being taken to task. So she said, well, why didn't you tell me that your suitcase was ready? And the mother said, well, you must have heard me coming down the stairs, and you knew I was getting ready to leave. And the daughter said, how could I know I was in the shower? So, you know, they ended up in an argument. But the very thing that she so treasured in her daughter, she was resenting when her mother wanted the same thing. you should understand without my telling you. We can all understand that. You think about a birthday present. You don't want to say what you want because then you would lose the payoff that the person understands you and knows you well enough and cares to do something about it. So it's another facet of this aspect that women are always tend to, and again, it's not unique to women, but we tend to focus on how close and distant are we, and is the closeness and distance that I want the same as the one that you want? And when there are differences there, that's when you can end up with one feeling left out and the other feeling encroached on.
We need to mention to our listeners that in your book you also offer hope, lots of help, lots of suggestions for mothers and daughters improving this aspect of their lives.
Yes, and I am amazed by how many women already are telling me how much it's helped them. The advice I give to mothers is realize that any help can come across as criticism and bite your tongue unless it's utterly necessary, maybe a matter of health. But also to daughters, just remind yourself that it isn't only criticism, it's also caring. So you're really both right. So one woman told me this already helped. It transformed a relationship. Every time she went home, she said they would end up fighting, and this time they didn't. For example, and I asked her for an example, and she said, well, she had bought two pairs of socks, one black, one navy. And when she showed her mother, no, fine, the next day she was wearing one pair of the socks, and her mother said, are you sure you're not wearing one of each color? And the daughter told me in the past that would have set her off. But this time she just reminded herself, who else is going to care about the color of my socks?
That's
you know,
good.
It's kind of touching.
Absolutely. Just another way to look at it. And as you say in that chapter, there are all kinds of ways in which we can change the script. And sometimes just lightening up and seeing the humor in things is the very best way to handle these potentially
yes,
difficult
and
moments.
Obviously, there's lots more advice that I give, but can't go through all of it here.
Absolutely. A beautifully written book, and by the way, dedicated to our author's mother. And many of those stories are very much here as well in this book called You're Wearing That, Understanding Mothers and Daughters in Conversation, published by Random House. Deborah Tannen, I thoroughly enjoyed this book and enjoyed talking with you today about it on the morning show. Best wishes to you.
Thank you so much.